May it please the Court, my name is Dennis Charney, and I represent Elias Manuel Custodio with respect to this appeal from the District Court's decision regarding various post-conviction relief motions and petitions that Mr. Custodio filed. Approximately 12 years ago, Mr. Custodio was involved in an altercation in which two individuals were killed and one individual was seriously injured at a party and a fight. Ultimately, Mr. Custodio was charged with two counts of murder and one count of aggravated battery. There were pretrial motions, in particular with respect to the issues presented in this case. One of those motions involved a motion to suppress as a result of an allegation that the Fifth Amendment waiver in this particular case was not knowing, intelligent, and voluntary.
Counsel, when you look at what the Idaho court recited in the record and what the government indicated in response, you have a very heavy burden here to show that it was not knowing and intelligible. Although the initial doctor suggested he was very inebriated, said he was alert, didn't have any problem balancing himself or walking. There's a videotape. He's alert enough he can reach out and grab a fly a la Obama. I mean, this is not somebody that's comatose. How can you possibly meet the burden in this circumstance?
I think ultimately the question has been addressed by the district court at the state level, the Idaho Court of Appeals, as well as the district court at the federal level, and this appeal followed. The burden, of course, this is a de novo review,
right,
and the burden is clear and convincing evidence that the state court determination was objectively unreasonable. Mm-hmm. So I recognize the burden is heavy and high.
And what can you refer to us in the record that enables your client to meet that burden?
I think simply a recitation of the videotape and a review of the videotape in and of itself by an independent panel of the Ninth Circuit, in my view, would reveal that the clear and convincing evidence standard has been met. As far as pointing to any one particular thing or item, that's very difficult to do.
Your client has the burden to bring that one thing, that one item up, does he not?
He does. And
what is that item?
I think that the one thing in the one item is that it appears, and I think it's fair to argue, that the the state courts and the lower courts, lower court in the federal, on the federal side of this equation, really did not engage in a true totality of the circumstances analysis. As I pointed out in my initial opening brief, what appears to have been done is each factor that Mr. Custodio complained of was analyzed separately by the various courts, the State District Court and the Court of Appeals, as opposed to looking at what I would say is, first off, the analysis was evaluated, was he drunk? Then there was analysis, was he tired? Then there was an analysis as to whether or not the 69-second period of time where Detective Anderson discussed with him, you know, his rights and the cursory manner in which he got him to sign the form was not really coercive but fully explanatory enough. And I think that the record as analyzed from below in each of these instances reveals that these were not weighed as required by the United States Supreme Court in Moran, which requires a totality of the circumstances.
But counsel, the district court prepared a 32-page memorandum order.
Yes.
How can you say that he didn't review the evidence and independently review the evidence with a memorandum of that length?
The memorandum can be 132 pages, but if it doesn't say that I have looked at not just tired, drunk, was this cursory, but did the combination of all of these things factor into a waiver that was not knowing and was not intelligent?
Do you think there's a magic words formula? you're kind of following the line that some do with 3553A, that they've got to refer to the code section and so on, and that's been clearly rejected by our court and the Supreme Court.
No, I do not believe that there is a magic words formula.
What are you looking for
here? I think, once again, what we're looking for is for a reviewing court, as well as the initial state district court, to look at the combination of everything together, as opposed to each factor in isolation, to come to the conclusion that the waiver in this case was not knowingly and intelligently made.
What gives you the idea that he didn't take a look at it all together after reciting all the elements of which we've discussed?
Well, I've not been able to find any verbiage in either the state.
He didn't say, I am now considering everything that I have now stated as a totality of the circumstances, so that on appeal I'm not accused of not considering the totality of the circumstances. Unless he says that, he fails your test.
I'm not saying just him. I'm saying that Judge Horton, the district court judge, the Idaho Court of Appeals, as well as the district court, Judge Lodge on the federal side, have never said, you know, in reviewing all of these factors in combination, basically blending them up and looking at them, we do not see any recitation by any court to this point indicating that the entire totality of the circumstances test was met.
You're thinking that simply mentioning that he's tired acquires a heavier meaning when you say he's tired and drunk.
I think that's...
Drunk acquires a heavier meaning when you say he's drunk and tired.
I wouldn't necessarily say heavier meaning, but it's one thing to be tired, it's one thing to be drunk, but it's something else to be both tired and drunk, and perhaps ill, and perhaps injured.
If the Idaho trial court and the district court viewed the videotape, how can we say that they didn't view the totality of the circumstances? The videotape shows his tiredness, his drunkenness, his lack of coordination, or coordination depending on catching an insect. Once that evidence is displayed to the trier of fact, isn't it impossible to say he didn't review the totality of the circumstances?
I don't know if it's impossible to say that they didn't review the totality of the circumstances, Your Honor, but what the difficulty is in this case is that no court has ever said, and they've cited the correct case law, they've cited the correct standard, but no court has ever said, viewing the totality of the circumstances, we find that the waiver was knowing, intelligent, and voluntary.
Actually, I'm looking at page 17 of the memorandum order, and I don't know exactly the line, but I'm reading from Judge Lodge's order. Quote, rather, the totality of the circumstances, including his stated goal to tell his side of the story, suggests that he simply chose not to invoke his right to a lawyer sooner, hoping that his cooperation would merit some amount of leniency. So your magic words formula is satisfied, is it not?
Don't have that particular portion of the order in front of me, but I would need to review it, and perhaps I could address that on rebuttal.
Will you accept my representation that it's in the order on page 17?
I will, but I'd like to look at that in the context of the balance.
If you're right,
yes,
if you're right, and you've told certainly Judge Bea and me that there is a magic words formula, and the magic words are there, doesn't that end your case?
I wouldn't think that would necessarily end the case if this court reviewed the tape and found the district court's conclusion with respect to whether or not the waiver was knowing and intelligent.
That's a different issue than the totality of the circumstances recitation that you just referred to.
True, but what I'm suggesting is that this court can come to its own totality of the circumstances recitation and determine that the three prior courts were objectively unreasonable. May I reserve my last minute? Thank you.
Sure.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Jessica Lorello, and I represent the respondent in this case. I'll try to keep my comments brief in light of my voice this morning. But, of course, the sole question certified for appeal to this court is whether the state court's adjudication of the Miranda claim was contrary to or an unreasonable application of clearly established Supreme Court precedent. The state's position is, of course, that it is not an unreasonable application of Miranda, and every court that has viewed the videotape to date has looked at that video and concluded that Mr. Custodio's waiver was knowing, voluntary, and intelligent. And this is not an objectively unreasonable application of Miranda.
What do we do with the fact that Dr. Sanderson, who saw him at 11:15 a.m. on the morning after the murders, said that he was obviously intoxicated and did not do a blood test? There's no blood test in the medical records.
With respect to Dr. Sanderson's testimony, I think that the state trial judge found that his conclusion that Mr. Custodio was intoxicated was based on the odor of alcohol and his boastful demeanor and how he appeared not to be remorseful about shooting two people. That said, the interview with law enforcement occurred, the factual finding by the trial court was more than 2 hours later. And if you take Dr. Sanderson's testimony and his belief that he was intoxicated based on that behavior,
Is there any evidence as to what Mr. Custodio did between leaving Dr. Anderson's surgery and going to the police officers? Did he go back to the bar and start drinking?
No.
I think
he went from the hospital back to the police annex. Yeah, he was in custody actually while at the hospital.
Because as I remember the record, he left the hospital at 1:20, didn't show up until the 2 o'clock at the police. Is that 40 minutes away?
Well, I don't know what actually went on. He was taken to the hospital by law enforcement. So he turned himself in to law enforcement about 11:15. He went to the police station and said, "Here's my gun. I want to turn myself in regarding the shootings that just occurred over on Edson Street."
But they took him to the hospital first.
Yeah, and he said he'd been stabbed. So the officer took him to the hospital, and he was at the hospital. I assume it's standard emergency room protocol. It takes a while, and then was back at...
They didn't get back to the police station until 2 o'clock.
Right, and that's the questioning occurred sometime thereafter. So it was more than 2 hours after the doctor saw him. But if the indication that he was drunk was because he was boastful, that certainly no longer existed by the time he was interviewed by law enforcement, and I think the video reveals that he wasn't really boastful at all at that point.
Does the record indicate that any questioning of Mr. Studio occurred between the time that Dr. Sanderson saw him and he returned to the police station?
It doesn't actually indicate, Your Honor, that no questioning occurred. And there is a police report actually attached to the PSI, and the PSI is the state's lodging, I think A8. It's pretty large, so it's not paginated, but there is a police report, and the custody officer that transported him specifically said that he did not ask him any questions. There was some statements that Mr. Custodio made that were picked up on the officer's recording device, but he did not question him.
How about on the way to the hospital after he first came in to turn himself in?
I don't believe so. I think the same custody officer was in the ambulance with him. And in fact, actually, Mr. Custodio, to the healthcare professionals who were treating him, made very similar statements to those that he made to law enforcement.
They were unsolicited either by the doctors or the police.
That's correct. I mean, well, the doctors said what happened to you.
Right. But I mean, in terms of trying to probe.
That's correct.
Criminal activity.
That's correct. And of course, the court is correct that there is no talismanic phrase. And I would also note that the state trial court, the state appellate court, and the federal district court, as you noted, actually recited the totality of the circumstances test. And then the fact that the court then addressed each of the individual factors that Mr. Custodio raised doesn't mean that they ultimately didn't apply that test. They were just simply addressing factors he believed indicated that his waiver was not voluntary.
Is there any case law that would suggest that your opposing counsel is correct that you have to refer to the totality of the circumstances regardless of whether you cite cases or not?
I'm not aware of any, Your Honor. In fact, I think there may be a case to the contrary, but I couldn't cite it to you. And of course, the standard is ultimately whether the court's decision was objectively unreasonable, and the court doesn't even have to cite the controlling standards as long as the end result is not objectively unreasonable. And I'm certain there's a case that says that. Right. I just can't tell you what it is. And I would just also note a couple of other things just to bolster the conclusion and the findings made by the trial court regarding Mr. Custodio's demeanor and that his waiver was knowing, voluntary, and intelligent. Mr. Custodio, as the court will see, reviews the videotape. If it hasn't already, he gives his date of birth. He refuses to give his parents' number. He gives an old address. He spells his street name. He gives his employer's number. And with respect to the comment that he sounded like he slurred his spelling of his last name, actually, the officer, when trying to writing it and spelling it out loud, Mr. Custodio actually corrected the spelling of his last name. So all of those factors, I think, lead to the conclusion that the state court's decision was not an objectively unreasonable application of Miranda. Unless the court has further questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good luck with your voice.
It's better than I thought it would be.
I think in summary, what's really the duty of this court is to review the videotape and maybe against the backdrop of the things that I pointed out in my briefing and determine independently if there is clear and convincing evidence that convinces you that the prior rulings were objectively unreasonable. Very briefly, to address the other issue that was raised, the one that's not certified, we have approximately 11 issues that were raised to the district court below, briefed by Mr. Custodio, briefed by the state, and were never addressed by the district court with respect to the cause and prejudice on his claims 2, 3, 5, 7, and 8 through 19. So I would ask this court to at least, I don't know if we're going to refer to it as a reversal or an order directing the district court to actually rule on those claims so that a further decision with respect to whether or not those claims are valid or invalid and whether any of those could be appealed could be brought.
My impression was that the court entered an order dismissing all those claims.
That was not quite accurate. The court went through those claims and said that they would be dismissed, but then gave Mr. Custodio an opportunity to brief them, and the state responded, and I believe Mr. Custodio filed a reply, but then the court never actually ruled on the cause and prejudice issues that were raised and briefed by both the appellant and the state of Idaho.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This matter will stand submitted.